the court officials, the bureaucrats, seize control of that central government. The chief minister, a eunuch known as John the Many-Eyed, he had agents all through the palace, essentially took over the administration of the government. Basil II himself is responsible for this. He had not trained those daughters, and he not provide of his brother, his nieces. He had not provided them with husbands, and so they fell into the hands of ambitious ministers who married Zoe to a succession of weak emperors, three of them, in fact, over the course of her reign. And the last of the three, Constantine the Ninth, was perhaps one of the great patrons of the Middle Byzantine period. He also turned out to be one of the most depraved and inept of all the rulers. What happened then is that those state institutions that existed in Constantinople that had been nurtured by Basil and represented several hundred years of achievement, those institutions fall into the hands of a very ambitious and uncontrolled civil aristocracy, and they use them to exploit the provinces. Increasingly, from 1025, from the death of Basil, down to 1056, when Theodora dies, the last member of that family, the younger niece of Basil, the imperial government is alienating the crucial support of its hinterland in Asia Minor. Now, at first, the imperial government could get away with this. Basil had left the government well stocked with money. And believe me, if there is one thing Zoe and her husbands knew, it was how to spend money. And they had more than just legitimate patronage in mind. In addition, there were cutbacks in the military because Basil had been so successful in defeating opponents on the battlefield. There was a sense that we don't have to expend money. And anyway, when Zoe needed a new outfit to wear, why bother about the Navy? There's a shocking case where there's an assault by the Russian Navy and there's no ships left. They've all been spent. The money was all embezzled by Zoe and her ministers. So some of this decline really does belong to Basil II. He feared potential rivals and never provided for an adequate succession. Yet the dynasty was so powerful, it was associated with the religious and cultural revival of which I spoke, its early stages in the 9th and 10th century. The daughters of Constantine VIII, that is the nieces of Basil II, were popular. The civil administration, the church hierarchy would not move against him. And the aristocracy in Anatolia, so vital to imperial armies, and many of these fellows are seeing the military cutbacks, did not take initiative until the dynasty was defunct. And when the dynasty was defunct, they put a man on the throne, a choice of theirs, one in 1057, a man named Isaac I, and then again in 1068 with Romanus IV. These military candidates found that they really couldn't control the situation in the capital, that the corruption had gone so far that they were really trapped by the very institutions which were to make imperial government effective. And what had happened is those institutions had been perverted. And what was worse, those institutions were now looked upon with resentment and fear and suspicion by the populations of Asia Minor. So there is this loosening of those vital ties between the capital and the provinces in Asia Minor during the course of the 11th century. As a result, the imperial government was in no position to meet the new threats that emerged. And those threats were really not very serious. I always think that Basil II could have laughed at these guys and they would have run away. One were a group of Frenchmen, Normans, actually Vikings who pretended they were French, who arrived in southern Italy and took over Byzantine possessions there and attacked the Byzantines from southern Italy into the Balkans with Constantinople as their objective. And these people we call Normans or Northmen. They're descendants of Vikings who had settled in Normandy. Their first duke, Robert Guiscard, really had Constantinople as his objective. The other group were the Seljuk Turks, I mentioned in a previous lecture. They were tribes from Central Asia. And their first sultan or leader, as he's known, his name is Tugrul Bey. He welded these tribes who based their power on horse archers into an invincible army. And they swept through what is now Central Asia and Iran, entered the city of Baghdad in 1055, and are responsible for the revival of Islamic power, for the reestablishment of the effective authority of the Abbasid caliphs, who claimed to be the successors of Muhammad and who ruled over Islam. Now, these Turkish tribesmen, and we often call them Turkmen, meaning that they're tribesmen as opposed to just Turkish speakers, they were perhaps far more formidable opponents than the Normans, Or anyway, they turned out that way for several reasons.